tweet at Today SOR.
Declan Kybert, Professor of Irish Studies at Notre Dame, is home in Ireland at the moment, and next week he'll be at the Cúirt International Festival of Literature in Galway. He's been spending a lot of time reading and thinking and writing about how Irish writers act as a kind of early warning system. Declan, what do you mean by that?
Well, I mean that much of the topics that dominated journalism in the last 20 years were predicted decades earlier by the creative writers. For instance, the abuse problem. It's all through Beckett. I can't go on like this. That's what you think. The Irish have a dreadful capacity for living as if normal in totally abnormal situations. You can think of John McGahern. He described an abuse scene in his novel The Dark back in the 1960s. You can find similar scenes actually in Joyce's Dubliners. So there's a sense in which writers are clued in much earlier to what's going on, if we had only eyes to see and ears to hear.
And how do the big crises of the past that concerned our writers compare with the current concerns? I suppose there would be an overlap.
There's certainly an overlap, and people are, you know, writing now, for instance, about, if you like, fusion culture. We've had so many incomers in the last 15 or 20 years, and it's not just a matter of fusion food. There's a sense in which, you know, even Gaelic legend will be and is being reinterpreted by Nigerians, Romanians, etc., who make it their own. And I suppose it may take years for us to see how this pans out, but it's happening.
Yeah, but just to come back to something that's of current concern, it has obsessed us for the last 10 or more years, the banking crisis. Now, I mean, who foresaw or predicted that in literature?
Well, I would say if you look at plays by Tom Murphy through the 70s and 80s, they frequently have a spec builder portrayed often along Chicago gangster 1930s lines. It actually became almost a cliche, and I think Tom Murphy would admit this himself in his work, but it's also in other writings of the period. It doesn't take a prophet. Well, he was a prophet, but you can see the link I'm making between that and what came later. In the same way, Brian Friel wrote a play called The Mundy Scheme, which kind of more or less suggests that Ireland is going to be turned into a touristic theme park for visitors. I remember walking out the front gate of Trinity a few weeks ago and looking at all the shops and thinking how different they were from the ones which were there in my time in the early 70s and saying, yes, Brian Friel, he was a prophet too. He foresaw what was to come.
Yeah. Now, so you talk about writers reflecting crisis and indeed anticipating crisis. So how do you view the current housing crisis and our reaction to it as a people?
Well, I mean, you've just been talking very interestingly about it. To me, every second item on the RTE news goes back to the crash of 08. I actually am one of those people who believes that every time an item like that is mentioned, whether it's about housing or not enough hospital beds or looking for a wheelchair for a little boy in West Cork, it should be said in a single sentence that this is in some way connected with the absolutely disgraceful transfer of debt of the bankers to the taxpayers. Because you know, you do it every day, so many of the stories you're dealing with actually do have that sourcing. And, you know, I think people don't want to be demoralised or depressed or discouraged. And the ability to go on in the midst of discouragement is not an ignoble thing. But equally, we should look at the causes of...
And the late Brian Lenehan, Minister of Finance of the time, who was the man in the barn of Wales, so to speak, he spoke most eloquently about, heading off, in desolate circumstances, sort of in the snow at Baldonnell to Brussels, and hell was at the gates, I think was one of the phrases he used. But, I mean, he was getting it in the neck from Mr. Trichet, don't let your banks fail.
He was, and Mr. Trichet came over and had the audacity to repeat the lines to some of the plain people in the presence of what is called the European movement. One could argue that, in fact, that policy has done more harm to the European ideal than good.
Yeah, but are we not an awful lot better off, say, than the Greeks because we took the pain and the punishment, albeit unpalatable though it was?
Virtual historians will argue this for decades to come. You could equally draw the analogy with Iceland and say we would have been better off not to be such poster boys. Ireland, I think, and it's one of the themes in my book, has always been an experimental laboratory. Like initially for colonialism, religious apartheid, then for cultural revival, then for nationalism. In recent years, we were a kind of laboratory for market forces, seemed to do well for a while, and now we more recently a laboratory for austerity.
And when you come back, you're obviously observing things from afar in the United States, in Indiana, it is where Notre Dame is, isn't it?
That is indeed.
That's
yes.
Okay. It's
also flyover country and would have many similar problems to the ones we would talk about here in current affairs.
And on this visit, I mean, are there things that concern you? I mean, like the possibility of another property bubble. I mean, we were reporting last week, for instance, on queues forming outside, you know, new houses that were being put up for sale.
Yes, and I think there's a development in the modern world in general, which is that big cities are flourishing at the expense of the countryside around them. I've been through Galway, Tipperary, Kerry the last few days. I still see a lot of boarded up shops in middling and small sized towns. Again, the crisis you're talking about, mm-hmm. the fodder crisis, the lack of maybe proper provision, anticipatory provision for farmers. If the farmers had people running their affairs who had the anticipatory gifts of the writers I celebrate in my book, we mightn't be in such a mess.
Yeah, do writers, though, do they get the blame, though, for pointing out the problems in society, or do they always eventually earn our respect? I mean, we were talking earlier about Paddy Kavanagh, I think it was Brian Darcy, in the context of the death of Big Tom McBride, saying Kavanagh finally got recognition, but he had to outlive an awful lot of his critics to get that recognition.
Well, it's a bit like what they used to say about Maynard Keynes, the economist, that he predicted all 15 of the last two recessions. You can say that writers tend towards gloomy prognostication, but I think they are better clued in to what's going on the ground. And they're very aware. I mean, Edna O'Brien, long before news media caught on to it, was chronicling the sense of sexual repression of people in rural Ireland. Similarly, Seamus Heaney is talking about the way the death of ritual in his community helped to feed the rituals of death, because life didn't seem as sacred as it was. There is a sense in which I think writers do foresee a lot of what's to come. And I would say at the present moment, there's a kind of recovery probably happening in Dublin, but it's not national, and maybe the national idea is jeopardized by it. Now, that's no different from what's going on in Indiana and in the places that have voted for Mr. Trump, or indeed north of Watford.
Yeah, and the other thing, I suppose, again, we've been through the worst of it, at least this is what we like to think, and there is a little bit more money available, for the arts. I think there was a new plan announced last week, this Ireland 2040 project, and I think it's, what, about over a billion, 1.3 billion being provided.
Yeah.
Now, that presumably is something that you would welcome.
It's totally welcome, but with the following caveat. It's not enough simply to put up buildings. I mean, we even did that in the Tiger years.
Oh, Port
the countryside is filled with beautiful,
beautiful theatres,
which are not always as fully used as they might be. What's really important is people and doing things. And we have amazingly talented people here. My friend PJ Matthews, who's on the authority here in RTÉ, has often said to me, you know, we have storytellers, animators, poets, playwrights. We have a fantastic folk culture. We could make Ireland the kind of Disneyfied centre of children's culture for the whole globe in the next 20 years. If we asked people like, you know, Anne Enright, Bono, Neil Jordan to come in and just set up a kind of hub in which people, say, graduating students in the arts were given money and 2 years in which to produce works for the children of the world. And I think that the problem is we think too much in terms of buildings. It's like the parish priests in the 1950s, when Catholicism even then was going on the blink. They thought if they built big churches around the edges of the cities and towns, somehow the church triumphant would triumph. What it is really is people. And no matter how much infrastructure you promise the arts, in the end you have to have ideas and unleash the people who are creative.
And you see ideas, and we were talking in the studio just a few weeks ago to Bill Whelan about it, things like music generation, which just, it literally puts instruments into the hands of young people and gets them playing and practicing, and it's an idea that's going nationwide. That's the kind of thing you're talking about.
It is, because if you think of the way African Americans in the 19th century, say, took up the violin, the viola, the piano, and made these strange new sounds called jazz, which have swept the world. I mean, the court which I'm speaking at in Galway is a brilliant mini example, in a way, of a hub. It goes back to the court Filiachta, but it's a whole lot of creative people together in one space for a week. And you can imagine, you know, some of the possibilities that might flow from such conversations. But what I think is needed is not just the kind of ministerial and governmental support announced last week, which is excellent, but also to get some creative people who don't just have this awful jargon about monetizing the arts, but who actually look at what the creative gifts already existent are and how they could be tapped into in a moment of opportunity.
Now, you alluded briefly there a few moments ago to President Trump. I read somewhere that you would travel through academia in the United States, certainly along the East Coast. Now, I know you're not in the East Coast, and to find anybody who would actually admit to having voted for Trump. Now, does that suggest that there's an elite there who are completely out of touch with the rest of humankind in the United States?
Well, I think probably there was a sort of bubble, especially in the media. It wasn't particularly in academia, which was out of touch.
Point taken.
Mind you, I was in California in the 1980s, and I could never meet anyone who had voted for Ronald Reagan. Now there are quite a lot of the same people telling me they did. So this is revisionism with bells on. I think Trump did have support in conservative bastions of academia, but they were perhaps less willing to put their heads over the parapet than the likes of Steve Bannon, who is, I suppose, a kind of intellectual.
Okay, well, look, we leave it there. Professor Declan Kyber, thank you so much indeed for coming in. The event is called After Ireland, a public talk by Professor Declan Kyber, taking place next Wednesday. That's tomorrow week, April the 25th at 1 p.m. in the Aula Maxima at NUI Galway for the Cúirt Festival. The full programme can be found at cúirt.ie. That's C-U-I-R-T.